Hello, I'm Carol Waddis and this is Theatre Voice. Today we're talking to Mark Ball, the new Artistic Director of LIFT, London's International Festival of Theatre, which is currently taking place all over London until July 17th, or is it maybe 18th? Mark, welcome to Theatre Voice.
Hello.
Mark has come to the fore relatively quickly. It was only in 1998 that he established FIERCE, the annual and exciting festival of theatre that takes place annually in the West Midlands, having already set up FIERCE Earth, a laboratory for new work. Mark ran that until 2007. In 2008, he became head of events and exhibitions at the RSC, responsible for developing the company's profile with new audiences. Then in 2009, he was appointed director of LIFT, the biannual international festival founded by Rose de Gwen Fenton and Lucy Neal in 1981. Mark, just running through that little intro, you've made your impact very, very quickly. What was it that first drew you into the idea of theatre festivals and running them?
I think festivals are a fantastic vehicle for really looking closely at bodies of work. There's something about being able to bring a collection of artists, a collection of work together, and to package it in a very intensive way that allows you to look at it in a heightened and with a magnified sense. There is something about programming a festival where the thing becomes more than the sum of its parts.
Yes.
And that's what excites me, is the intensity of it, the fact that you can really build a community of artists and audiences together.
Yes.
To interrogate a particular area of work. And, they are exciting things.
And what was the area of work particularly, perhaps, to do with LIFT that you wanted to interrogate this year? What is your interest?
When I arrived at LIFT,
yes.
It was very clear to me that there was a huge amount of love for the organisation. LIFT is an organisation that I think has inspired a generation of theatre makers, and which is clearly held in high regard. But that's not enough. It was also very clear to me that LIFT, if it's to succeed, needs to be distinctive. It needs to be signalling some of the new directions in theatre making and within wider culture.
Yeah.
And what I've tried to do this year is to look ahead at what the direction of LIFT and the future of LIFT might be by focusing really on three areas. When I ask people about LIFT, about what they loved about LIFT, 9 out of 10 times they would say to me, it was seeing Della Guarda at Three Mills Island, that it was the seeing LIFT raise the Titanic in the Royal
yes,
Docks.
Yes.
It was Deborah Warner's extraordinary St Pancras project.
Yes,
and they are the projects which linger within people's consciousness. What people talked to me about was site-specific work.
Yes.
Was that ability of artists, homegrown and international, to make you look at the familiar in a completely different way.
Yes.
And that, I think, is something which LIFT has got a really crucial part to play, because although the world is very different from the one in which Rose and Lucy set up the International
yes.
Festival,
yes.
In 1981 there wasn't that much international work happening in the city. Now, you can't say that. There's a plethora of international work. Every mainstream cultural institution produces, very interesting, ambitious international programmes. So LIFT has to be distinctive. But what isn't happening is that international site-specific work. That ability to bring international artists in, to connect them with the inherent internationalism of London,
right.
And to really help you see the city afresh.
Right.
So site-based work, one real area of interest that we will be pursuing both this year and in future years. The second, and people talk to me about themes and strands, and do I have a theme for the festival? And one area that we're really addressing, it's not a theme, it's not a strand, I passionately believe it's actually the future,
yeah.
Is how is theatre going to adapt and respond to a new digital culture?
Yes.
Our society has been absolutely transformed.
We've gone through,
over the past 15 years.
A revolution.
A revolution which is speeding up and speeding up, and which I think the theatre sector has been slow to understand. When we change the way we communicate, we can change, we often change society, and we are changing the way in which we communicate.
Yes.
You know, we live in a much more digitally enabled world. Social media is prevalent. You know, younger audiences of today, and not just younger audiences, but particularly, I suppose, younger audiences of today, are using, you know, Twitter, MySpace, Facebook, the internet on a daily, hourly basis. They are creating their own content and publishing it themselves on YouTube, on Flickr. They are interacting in forums and through social networks. And I think that what digital culture has done is it's given people a whole series of expectations that they now bring to their interactions with institutions, including cultural institutions and including theatres.
So do you think, just to stop you just for one tiny second, do you think that how are you going to draw that generation that you've just described into an area that perhaps for some, like theatre, feels old-fashioned?
By making theatre not feel old-fashioned, by making the theatrical experience not only the experience where you sit in the dark for 2.5 hours and passively receive culture.
Yes.
Because I think a generation that has grown up that expects interaction and participation wants something different from its theatrical experiences. You know, and you see the rise of experiential work that puts the audience at the heart of the work. You see artists like Dries Verhoeven, who we've had in this year's Theatre Festival, linking audience members through technology to performers 8,000 kilometres away on a beach in Sri Lanka.
Yes, that's very interesting. I certainly felt that when I saw the Gob Squad here at the ICA. That was absolutely, because that was interactive between the audience sitting in the theatre and the audience outside the Mall.
Yeah.
And lots of other bits and pieces in between with kind of handheld cameras. So I felt it was very much geared to them, to the younger people in the audience than myself, and that they were relating to it immediately.
Yeah, you know, another show we had here, Rimini Protocols Best Before, each of the audience members had to operate a handheld games console and operate their own character who was represented on screen, who you were born on screen and you died on screen, you know. engaged people in both an individual and collective activity. So I think, you know, I think that a generation of theatre makers who've grown up, who understand digital culture, who also understand the impact of gaming culture.
Yes.
You know, gaming culture puts the audience at the centre of activity, are creating a new type of theatre practice which is more participative and which is more experiential, and which uses technology to allow people to participate. Having said that, there will always be the space for the extraordinary moment of experiencing culture collectively in the dark in a theatre, and Lift will always provide that space because that is a hugely powerful moment. I just don't think it's the only moment anymore.
No. Have you taken over? I mean, the one... looking through the brochure, what struck me particularly... and unfortunately I may not be able to get to see it, but is the piece of theatre on the Trinity Wharf Buoy, which goes from 11 o'clock at night until dawn. Can you talk a little bit about that? How that came to be one of your choices?
It's Trinity Buoy Wharf. Trinity Buoy Wharf. One of those hidden gems of London, actually, and one of the things that I think Rose and Lucy did so brilliantly was take people into those hidden parts of London.
Absolutely.
And really show them off.
Yes.
At Trinity Buoy Wharf, the only place in London that has a lighthouse.
Yes.
It's where historically all the buoys were made that float around our coastal waters. Michael Faraday worked there. It's an extraordinary place. It's now got lots of artist studios, live work, and Lift are based there. We have two converted shipping containers kind of kitted out next to the Thames. And
fantastic.
And also the University of East London are also there. And one of the lecturers at the University of East London is a Brazilian theatre director called Jorge Lopez Ramos, and who runs a Brazilian theatre company. And he approached me because he'd been developing a piece called Hotel Medea, which is a multimedia retelling of the Medea myth. It's a collaboration between Paractor Theatre Company and Zakura Ura, which is his theatre company in Sao Paulo. And they, excited by Trinity Bell Wharf, wanted to stage this through the night retelling of the Medea myth, through the night at Trinity Bell Wharf, with audiences arriving and leaving by boats.
I can't imagine it. I mean, so that's just what, from 11 until what, 4,
it's,
5?
It's from 11, six, it's six from 11 long? Until dawn. So dawn will be about 4:30, and then the boats will take
and
people.
And that's on the 17th of July.
That's on the 7th. That's on the 16th and 17th of July, yeah.
God, yeah. I wish I could come to that. I'm not sure I shall be able to, because I think I'm swimming in a river or something of the sort. So tell me how did you put this festival, for this first festival, together? Did you travel the world again, like Rose and Lucy have done?
Well, obviously, it's important for me to see the work, and that necessitates quite a lot of travelling.
Yes.
As I said, you know, we have these three these areas to give us real distinction, and that's site-based work which embraces digital culture. And the third area of work is we'll be focusing on very strongly over the next few years, is work coming from the Middle East and North Africa.
Yes.
It's a hugely exciting region. There's an enormous amount of work being made by young independent theatre makers, which defies our expectations and our stereotypes of that region. We've got an amazing show at the moment on the Riverside Studios by a young Tunisian company
called
Hob Story, which means love story in Tunisian, which is about the treatment of women in Tunisian society. And, you know, Tunisia has a theatre centre. I was watching this piece of theatre at the Riverside thinking, and I'd seen it in Tunisia, where 1,000 people were in the theatre, 1,000 young people were in the theatre, and 1,000 people outside the theatre trying to get in. Audible gasps at some of the subject matter that this piece of theatre was addressing: the treatment of women, homosexuality, relationships, love. Not things that you would expect the Arab world to be addressing through theatre. So we're also focusing on the Middle East. So, you know, selection was really made by thinking about those three areas that we wanted to focus on, doing a lot of travelling, and, you know, I also arrived here not as a novice, but with, you know, 10 years experience of running Fierce.
So you had people that you could go to. You had a kind of network already of artists and kind of festival people. There was a time, I think, though, interestingly, about festivals, which is that a lot of festival directors around the world were going around each other's festivals, and then they would be choosing those companies. So the same companies were turning up in the same festivals. Would you say that a lot of the work that you've got here in your festival is perhaps one-off, that they're not necessarily doing the festival circuit?
I think one of the things which is interesting about being in the UK as opposed to being in Europe, where I do notice that tendency a lot, is, you know, our rather, you know, ambivalent relationship to Europe.
Yes.
Means that we, I think, have a relationship to the US and to other parts of the world in a way that the European festivals sometimes don't, and you often see work kind of touring around the same festivals. I think it's really important that we are original and distinctive. I want Lift in the future to be, by and large, originating new work, to be commissioning work. You know, I've only been here a year. We didn't have time to do that many commissions. There are 4 commissions in this year's festival. Everything has been presented for the first time, either in Europe or in London.
Yes.
I think, you know, it's lazy programming to just go around festivals with a shopping list. You have to do something which has an authentic relationship to your own city.
But then you've also got to draw in the audience, haven't you? And I mean, one of the things that, while you were just saying that you'd been to Riverside and you'd seen that company in Tunisia, it has always often struck me here, Mark, that exciting theatre is when it has to be. There is something in the culture, in the society, which says we must do this piece of work here, now. It's so important. And so much goes on here that it's quite, in the UK, it's quite difficult. I mean, as you say, 1,000 people queuing up to see a piece of work in Tunisia.
And
you won't get that reaction here at the Riverside, will you?
Well, 1,000 people queuing up at that piece was also, you know, 1,000 people in the theatre, 1,000 people trying to get into the theatre, was an extraordinary reminder of the importance of theatre as a social space for discussion and for ideas.
Yes.
And, you know, of course, context in London is different. Although, interestingly, you know, we were worried about bringing Hop Story in terms of would we get an audience.
Yes.
It's in West London. Would our audience go to it? What we've seen is, although numbers aren't high, is that there's obviously quite a lot of word of mouth has gone around the North African community, and they are starting to turn up rather nervously on the day. You know, so it's yeah. I mean, clearly there is. You know, as we've touched on earlier, we are in a city which is, in many ways, I think, the cultural capital of the world, which has vast amounts of culture on a daily basis. I think that you need to present a distinctive programme that's about compelling ideas and that has a sense of urgency. I can't think of any better art form than theatre for really telling the urgent stories of our time. Mm. So, you know, I firmly believe that if the work's good enough, if it's distinctive enough, if it's interesting enough, you can engage audiences. You can't do it overnight, you know.
Absolutely.
It's part of a journey. You know, that's why we're saying
right.
We're going to be committing to work coming from the Middle East for the next 6 years.
Yes.
Because we need to take people on a journey with us. We can't put a piece of Tunisian theatre on and expect 300 people to turn up in year one, but they might in year six.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's the other lovely thing about festivals, of course, isn't it, is that you begin to acquire your audience.
Yeah.
And I think not only for the artists, that they gain momentum, and that if they do work for you every 2 or 3 years, then you begin to know them. But actually, audiences themselves, there's a momentum that's engendered within the festival itself. You get not just one piece within a festival, but you get 12 pieces that you can see.
Yep.
You may not see all of those 12 pieces, but there is a kind of momentum that builds. But I'm bound to ask you now, how difficult are you finding it to draw in audiences and to draw in critics? Because critics are notoriously still, I think, in London. We tend to be very kind of obsessed with the mainstream.
On the latter, I'm delighted at the amount of reviews that we've had this year. I mean, it's obviously quite difficult if you're a festival, because you're often only putting things on for one or two nights, and so by the time the review comes out, the show's over. And we've deliberately put in a number of longer runs, at the Elvic Tunnels, which where we opened the show last night, at the Barbican, Nalagat, the Deaf Blind Project, which has been running for 2 weeks,
yes.
Our South Depot.
Yes, which is marvellous.
And we have had an awful lot of reviewers out to those, and also we've had a lot of previews. I mean, I think people are genuinely interested in Lift, you know, in Lift reasserting itself.
Yes.
In terms of audiences, by and large, they've been pretty good, and certainly for the more unusual elements of the programme, bringing the world's only deafblind company to Arts Depot with a cafe staffed by deaf waiters and a blackout restaurant where you eat in the dark. I mean, that's been a near sellout hit.
Yes.
You know, I was at the first night of the Old Vic, of Aftermath in the Old Vic's tunnels underneath Waterloo Station. People intrigued by the content, but intrigued by the site.
Yes.
Absolutely packed.
Yes.
You know, I think where we've been struggling is where we've been occupying larger venues.
Absolutely.
And and where we've not been able to fill them. But I think that's part of a bigger story I think there's been a bit of a dip in theatre attendances since the outcome of the election, actually.
Really?
I think it's that combination of uncertainty.
Yes. Recession.
Recession, the looming threat of very large cuts in the public purse, the football, the hot weather.
The World Cup certainly will have taken audiences away, won't it?
So, no question. But you know, we've, by and large, we've hit our targets.
Are there any new techniques that you're going to bring to bear in terms of marketing to new audiences? You'll have another couple of years now, or another year or so, to kind of think about it, won't you? Are there any new things that you're thinking about, I don't know, in terms of kind of Twitter and Facebook and all the rest of it?
But I mean, clearly, the marketing mix, which is as the marketing professionals call it, the marketing mix is changing rapidly, and you know, the reliance on print-based marketing materials is disappearing.
Has it? Yes.
You know, we still felt it was important to people to have it, to be able to pick up a brochure and to have something tactile in their hands that they can hold that encompasses the whole of the festival.
Definitely.
But audiences increasingly find that about work, about work online, through Twitter, through Facebook, and obviously we're putting an awful lot of our marketing effort into making sure that we have big presence in the online world.
Yes.
And also, you know, when I ran Fierce in Birmingham, we did lots and lots of audience research, and, you know, 70% of our audiences found out through word of mouth. And it's building that word of mouth, which is actually easier to do online than it is through print, because once you put something online, somebody can pass it on.
Mm.
Once you put something in a leaflet rack, somebody picks it up, takes it home, and it's a singular thing.
Yes. Yes. Has it been difficult? I don't know what your financial situation is with LIFT. Do you get funding from the Arts Council?
We do.
And do you anticipate that's going to be... Have you got commitments for the next kind of couple of years?
Well, everybody...
2012, of course, isn't it?
Our next festival will be 2012. I mean, the Arts Council... we're a regularly funded organisation through the Arts Council, and there are several hundred in London. Every regular funded organisation is coming to the end of their three-year cycle, which ends at the end of March next year. So everybody will be reviewed, and will either go into a new three-year funding cycle or will not. And, you know, of course, everybody will be reviewed within the context of a comprehensive spending review, which is very likely to be severe.
Absolutely,
You know, those cuts will undoubtedly be passed on to the arts. So, you know, I think the sector is holding its breath. You know,
it be difficult for you to plan given that kind of outlook?
Well,
you just have to make your plans for 20. I mean, there's bound to be some kind of encouragement, given that it's 2012, an Olympic year, and cultural Olympiad, and all of that. Is that it would be extraordinary if that wasn't taken into account,
yes,
isn't it,
yes,
for LIFT, given that LIFT is a flagship festival, actually, now.
Yeah. And the Arts Council will make their next three-year funding decisions very quickly. So by December of this year, we will probably know whether or not we'll have funding between now and 2014.
Yes.
And, of course, that then gives us the security to plan. And yes, you know, there will be focus and attention, and 2012 is a huge opportunity for LIFT to be presenting a festival which is about the world, when the eyes of the world will be on London. And there will be, you know, more resources that we'll be able to apply for. But, you know, it's tough. It's a tough funding.
It's a huge challenge. Are you happy having taken on this challenge of LIFT? Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, I'm having a great time. I'm absolutely loving it. You know, it has its... You know, in many ways, what's not to love about a job where you meet incredibly interesting artists who help you see the world differently? You have to go to every part of the world to find them and have conversations with them, and then you get to, you know, and then you get to be able to present them afresh to London's audiences. It's a great job. Of course, it has its stresses, and you know, the 4 weeks that we're in now are incredibly intensive, and you know, I'm fortunate and I've got a great and amazingly hard working team behind me.
What have been some of the difficulties? Just give us a flavour of what is the most, apart from this very pressurised month, and only, or do you have an assistant? Do you have a kind of a co-producer so that there's somebody that you can bounce ideas off?
There's a producing team of two people in the organisation, right. So I'm the artistic director, and then there are two people who effectively execute my plans, because it's a big programme, there are 22 productions, so it's a lot of work.
Huge.
And we rely a lot also, of course, on the collaboration between venues, and they take a lot of the observational work on for us as well. It's the logistical problems of moving people around that, you know, you just underestimate. I mean, the Deaf Blind Company, there are 11 deaf blind performers on stage, but there are 45 people in the company.
Yes. That's expensive, though, as well, isn't it? Do they partly provide the finance for that themselves?
No, we have raised... I mean, that project has cost £300,000 to produce.
What is your budget, then?
Our overall budget is about £1.1 million.
Yes.
So that's that has been
a major slice.
It's been a very ambitious project, but you know, getting 45 people, their carers, 11 people who are deaf and blind from Israel to the UK, finding them suitable accommodation, all of those things have been kind of difficult. I mean, you know, it's I'm delighted that we've washed our face on that project financially, because people have been incredibly generous in supporting it, and we've raised a lot of money. You know, we have raised the £300,000 to enable it to enable it to happen.
Wonderful, wonderful. And you say that it's selling out, is it?
It's selling out, yeah.
Fantastic. What else has been doing well? You're kind of halfway through, aren't we?
We're halfway through. I think, for me, the other highlights are, it was an amazingly beautiful experience, experiencing live streaming by Gilles Verhoeven, the Dutch artist and theatre maker, where 20 members of an audience went into a specially constructed internet cafe outside the National Theatre and had an hour of an intimate encounter mediated through headphones and a computer with a performer sitting in an internet cafe on a beach in Sri Lanka, 8,000 kilometres away. Each of those 20 performers in Sri Lanka, people whose lives have been turned upside down by the 2004 tsunami. Mm. Mm. And that ability over the hour to be able to get behind the images of victims that we so often see on our TV screens when a disaster happens, to get to the real stories, to uncover the stories about the reconstruction, the rebuilding, the pride that people have in their communities, was a deeply moving experience. Seeing back-to-back theatre from Australia produce and perform a mesmerisingly, visually beautiful, brutal piece of theatre at the Barbican, back-to-back of a company with learning disabilities, and of course, when you say we're presenting a company with learning disabilities, you have an expectation of piece of community theatre. This was work on the main stage of the Barbican, which in terms of its artistic quality would rank alongside Castellucci or Peter Brook. I mean, it's absolutely extraordinary.
It makes me so irritated when I hear you say that, because that I've missed it. I mean, is there a chance that they'll be returning?
Not with this show. There's a chance that they'll be returning in 2012, but they've now gone back to Australia.
Yes,
that was a real highlight, and I'm very much looking forward to this evening. We open a whole weekend at the National Theatre of a production by a young company called Hide and Seek. Hide and Seek make theatrical games. They make playful, interactive games, and the National, with a great deal of gusto and enthusiasm, has thrown open all of the doors to use the theatre spaces, the terraces, the rooftops, all the spaces of the National to allow artists who've been over the last 6 months making a series of interactive games for audiences, to allow those artists to play across the whole of the National's estate.
That's brilliant. I mean, you've got partners in the Barbican, you've got partners at the National. I see you're doing something with the RSC. Has it been difficult to persuade any of those partners to come on board? I can't imagine it has.
No.
Except from a kind of logistical point of view, maybe, or a scheduling point of view.
Apart from those, and of course the inevitable financial conversations you have to have. No, it's not. I mean, it's when I got the job, you know, I think I did have a nagging worry: does London need lift? And when I went to meet the venue partners and to meet producers, people said we really want lift back. So it's not been a hard task persuading people.
Well, I know what I'm going to do in 2012. I'm just going to put the next month, I'm going to put that month aside when Lyft is here. Mark, thank you very much indeed.
It's a pleasure.
It sounds absolutely thrilling. Thank you.
Thank you.